Hey, everybody, it's Mike from the Mike Wagner Show, powered by Sonic Web Studios and brought to you by our official sponsor of the Mike Wagner Show, international warring author Mia Molson's The Missing, available on Amazon and paperback and ebook. We're here with two terrific ladies, and one of them is a healthcare communicator for 20 plus years, co-founder of The Art of Infertility, curated 30 exhibits since 2014. Also, another one, Fillet, who's an assistant professor of English at University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, and co-director of The Art of Infertility. And also, the new book honors the experiences and perspectives of diversity of individual lives with infertility. Of course, you know, that's an issue that's not been talked about for quite some time, and bring updates to it as well. And basically, it just seeks to break the silence and shame, stigma, and isolation surrounding the problem concerning bearing a child, while demonstrating how central creativity and grievance and healing. It's all based on art as well. And live, ladies and gentlemen, Plus Studios in beautiful downtown Milwaukee and Ann Arbor, Michigan, and hovering around the Great Lakes area, the amazing healthcare communicator and also assistant professor of English, and the also a collaborator in the book, Infertilities, a Curation. Ladies and gentlemen, we have two multi-talented people, Elizabeth Horn and Maria Novotny. Guys, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having us. We're excited to be here.
And Marie, thanks for joining us as well, too. We're excited to have you on.
Yeah, thanks so much. We're excited to be here.
Okay, great. So basically, Elizabeth, you're a healthcare communicator for 20 plus years. You're co-founder of The Art of Infertility. You curated 30 exhibits since 2014. And Maria, you're an assistant professor of English at UW Milwaukee and co-director of The Art of Infertility. You guys collaborate on a book, Under the Experiences and Perspectives of Diversity and Individual Lives Living with an Infertility. And the book is called Infertilities, a Curation. And before getting all that, tell us how you first got started.
Okay, well, I usually start off. This is Elizabeth. I was diagnosed with infertility when I was in my early 30s or so. It's been quite some time now, over a decade ago. And I, like many individuals diagnosed with infertility, was not really ready to share my story with my close friends and family. Even it's estimated that about 61% of women don't share their infertility diagnosis even with their close friends and family. So similar for me, but I was really frustrated by the fact that the diagnosis and the disease was so invisible. It was something that was impacting my life really dramatically, and it was something that couldn't be seen. So I started creating some artwork around my experience as a way to kind of process what I was dealing with. I'm a photographer by training, but when it came to processing my infertility, I turned to mixed media. So I started ripping up some paper and doing some collages, using some found objects and other items, and really felt it was a great outlet for me because it allowed me that kind of time and space to process what I was dealing with. So I approached a local art museum where I lived at the time in Jackson, Michigan, about displaying an infertility art exhibit that would share the stories of men and women and individuals dealing with infertility through art. So that exhibit opened in spring of 2014, and I was really surprised. I guess I maybe shouldn't have been, but surprised by the way that people were using the exhibit, whether they participated as an artist or not, to bring their friends and family and share the experience with infertility through the exhibit. So it was a lot easier, I guess, in many cases to share those feelings and those issues through art and through something that you can have a conversation around, rather than doing that, across an awkward dinner table or over a cup of coffee. And I was interested in bringing it to other communities, but I didn't really know quite how I was going to do that. And shortly after that exhibit opened, I traveled to Washington, D.C. for Resolve, the National Infertility Association's Advocacy Day, where I met Maria. Maria and I were both running Resolve peer-led support groups at the time in the state of Michigan and different areas of the state. But we met and we connected on the fact that we were both using art, and in Maria's case, creative writing, as a way to process our infertility. So I'll let Maria share a little bit about what she was doing at that time.
That's really interesting. And was it one precise moment that simply influenced you into what you're doing?
I really think that I mean, I was recovering from a surgery when I started creating that artwork. First of all, I had an exploratory laparoscopic surgery to look for endometriosis, which I was diagnosed with a condition that can sometimes cause infertility. And like, I was a photographer. I couldn't use my camera because it was too heavy. I was on weight restrictions, so just kind of trying to pass the time while I recovered at home and started to pick up those art supplies and create art.
That's interesting. And who are some of your favorite artists that inspired you?
Ooh, that's a great question. I really love some portrait photographers that I love. Deanne Arbus is one, for example. But during that time, I think that one of the artists that I probably was inspired by, because I was inspired by in general at the time, was a local artist here in Ann Arbor named James Lounsbery, Jim Lounsbery. And he unfortunately passed away a few years ago, but he did really beautiful urban landscapes. And I was always really intrigued by those, inspired by the brush strokes and the dimension and the texture that his paintings exhibited. So I imagine that he was a big inspiration at that time, among others.
That is sounds interesting. Makes me think of Bob Ross too, which I'll get a painting and do so as well too. And Maria, you've been assistant professor of English at UW Milwaukee, and tell us how you first got started.
So I first got started doing this work on infertility largely, well, through my own experience, like Elizabeth mentioned. I actually didn't even think I was going to be an assistant professor or do any work on infertility. I thought I married my high school sweetheart, who I've known since I was 15, and we both come big from big families. I'm the oldest of six, and I thought we were going to get pregnant right away and have a family. And let me tell you, that has not happened whatsoever. Fast forward almost 20 years since
Wow.
being with him. And so what happened largely was that we got married because really we wanted to have a family, and we were living in Milwaukee at the time. And my husband's job actually took us to Grand Rapids, Michigan. And about a year, of trying to get pregnant, nothing was happening. I was getting really frustrated and needed to do something different. I was just working kind of like writing, doing grant writing consultation kind of from my house and not leaving, and just constantly seeing women walk around with strollers or walk, with little kids, little toddlers on their bikes, and just feeling like I'm gonna go insane if I don't get out of this house. And decided to apply to a master's program at Michigan State simply because it was the closest thing, not knowing much about it. And lo and behold, through that process, I took a class that was basically on queer rhetorics, and I started to really find connections between how I was feeling in my own body, this, female body that felt like, why can't I get pregnant? Why can't it do the thing that I thought it should do? So I started making these connections and thought, maybe I actually want to stick in this program and do my PhD. And maybe I actually want to do it on things about infertility, not knowing exactly what I was going to write about. English, infertility, those things don't always go together. But at the time, right, I had met Elizabeth, like she mentioned, in Washington, D.C., and she had told me about how she was curating this first exhibit that basically featured a lot of, multimodal pieces of art that patients had created, basically telling their stories about infertility. And I thought that was really interesting. So I went actually to see the first exhibit right before it closed, and I was like, my like jaw dropped, and it just was a light bulb moment where I thought, you know what, this is actually, there's something happening here. There's a lot of work where, when you're going through infertility, you can't tell necessarily that that person or that couple's dealing with it. But Elizabeth, through the artwork, was making all that visible and making visible the physicalness of it, the financial barriers, the emotional barriers, the mental barriers. And I it's just kind of dawned on me, like, let's do something and let's research a little bit, basically how men and women are telling their infertility stories or using creative practices like art or writing to basically showcase and tell people. Like Elizabeth said, it's so hard to even like tell your mom or your dad, hey, guess what? We actually are having a lot of trouble getting pregnant. It's a very difficult thing to utter those words for the first time. And in our book, we even cite like not many people actually even disclose, right? Like that you're going through infertility. So that's what happened essentially is I met Elizabeth and I was in this program where they thought, oh yeah, this seems really important. We can support community engaged work. And we just started meeting consistently and kind of developing the project from when Elizabeth first launched it in this one little exhibit into this traveling larger art exhibit that eventually then we made into a book.
That is rather interesting. I really like that. And was it one precise moment that simply influenced you into what you're doing, especially for the rest of your career?
Well, I think if really meeting Elizabeth and seeing that artwork really was, if I did not do that, I actually don't know what I would be doing at this exact moment. Probably like studying like women's blogs and how they write about their infertility on blogs, which also seems so dated now that I say these things, but that was like a real
Well,
thing.
some people
Like
still
10.
write them though. It's like, I mean, better than
Yeah.
like, like your the old way, get lost and everything. And some people still do them. Some people even put them on Facebook.
Yeah. But I would say really, like honestly, meeting Elizabeth and doing that was foundational into really understanding that I could do this work. And that, there are a lot of men and women who use art, who use writing to kind of just process any sort of health condition. It doesn't have to be just infertility, but any sort of loss or grief, when you're going through that, it can be really much a healing practice.
That is rather interesting. We'll get more into the book about infertilities, a curation with Elizabeth Horn and Maria Novotny in just 1 minute. But first, you listen to The Mike Wagner Show at themikewagnershow.com, powered by Sonic Web Studios. Visit online at sonicwebstudios.com for all your needs. Looking for a professional website without breaking your budget, Sonic Web Studios is the answer. Sonic Web Studios offers fast, affordable custom web designs that blow the competition away. Call today, 1-800-303-3960. That's 1-800-303-3960. Or email to support@sonicwebstudios.com. Mention the Mike Wagner Show, get 20% off your first project. Sonic Web Studios, take your image to the next level. Also, time to give official shout out to our official sponsor, the Mike Wagner Show, international warring author Mia Molson Zia. If you love fast-paced mysteries, you'll love Missing by Mia Molson Zia, available on Amazon and paperback and ebook. Missing is fast-paced and intriguing with an unforgettable twist. Takes place in four countries, two strangers, one target, where truth is illusion and those you love will be the first go missing. It's available on Amazon and paperback and ebook. Missing by Mia Molson Zia has garnered great reviews. An Eve of Love and Joys by Hollywood celebrities, including Joanna Cassidy, Forbes, Riley, and many others. So grab your copy today for Girls Missing by Mia Molson Zia, available on Amazon. Also, check out The Mike Wagner Show at The Mike Wagner countries, including Facebook, SoundCloud, Spreaker, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Also, Anchor FMs, iTunes, Google Play, Amazon, Audible, Apple Music, as well as Podbean, Buzzsprout, Pandora, and TuneIn. And also catch us on BitChute, BitChute, Rumble, and make sure you subscribe to us on YouTube and follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, and more. Take us with you on any mobile device. And for great gift ideas, 24/7, 365, go to Amazon.com. Check out the Mike Wagner Show podcast. T-shirts, pop sockets, throw pillows, tote bags, hoodies. Makes great gifts 24/7, 365 for family, friends, pets, and loved ones. Go to Amazon.com. Check out the Mike Wagner Show podcast. And for more great gift ideas, go to Amazon.com/MiaMolsonZia for great books like Missing, Once, and Wrinkles. Also T-shirts, pop sockets, hoodies, phone cases, and more. Amazon.com/MiaMolsonZia. Check it out today and support the Mike Wagner Show on Anchor FM, PayPal, and the MikeWagnerShow.com. We're here with two amazing ladies collaborating in a book, Infertilities, a Curation, Elizabeth O'Horn and Maria Novotny here on the Mike Wagner Show, and talk a little bit about the book and maybe just more about the book and about basically just using art, honoring experiences, and perspectives, and everything else, and breaking through the silence. That is the most important thing of all the subject we've covered, like with PTSD and also the pandemic and everything else. And the infertility seems like that is the very, very, very least talked about.
Yeah, I think that it's getting better over time. I think it's definitely improved since we started, almost a decade ago now. But it definitely is still pretty unheard of, especially a lot of times we hear stories of the white heterosexual couple who's trying to conceive. And one of the things that we definitely wanted to do in this book is show a lot of diversity, of course, diversity of art and writing, but also really getting the point through that infertility doesn't discriminate. It impacts everyone in terms of like younger people and older people. I think we've heard a lot of misconceptions over time working in this area. People think it's going to be an older couple that, quote unquote, waited too long to try to conceive, or that every story ends with a successful pregnancy or a successful adoption. And we know that through living in this community that that's certainly not the case, and wanted to share as many different stories as we could. And of course, anytime you get finances and sex involved in a topic, that's something that's going to be a little more taboo than other topics, and infertility certainly involves both of those topics. So it definitely is still really I think quieted, and that's one of the things that using art can do is really make it visible.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say too that the silence part of it is there's a lot of like self-shame and questioning, like, why is this happening to us? And making it right feel like it's a very singular type of experience. But I think some of it too is that, and this is what the book's trying to do as well, is that it's really hard, I think, to open up and share that experience with other people because we don't have a lot of good language around how to actually have those conversations with our friends, with our family members. We're really great at saying like, hey, we're pregnant, and like we just celebrate and congratulate everyone about it. But when you say, hey, we're infertile, it can be like dead silence, right? Like, okay, wait, mood's totally shifted. I don't know what to say. How do I handle this? And I think that's also what the book's trying to do too. Like, the book is for infertility patients, but it's also for like your friends, your family members who are like, I don't know how to even understand or navigate everything that they're going through. The book really, probably providing patient experiences, I think helps give an inside look into it without having to be like, tell me everything. How are you doing? Because sometimes you just want to be like, it's just been a really bad day. I just want to like sit here and cry and just have you listen. And I think it's trying to do that translation work.
And of course, does infertility does it really have to end, or is it like other ways around as well? Yeah, I could think of like adoption or what was it, intravital fertilization, or it's like test tube. It's like that's another thing too. It's just like I remember test tubes. They were experimenting with that, I think, what, 80s, 90s or something like that. So I don't know if they're still doing it, but it doesn't necessarily have to end though.
Yeah, no, it does not end whatsoever. I mean, I still run a peer-led support group, and I run it mainly because, like, through my own experience, I was able to successfully adopt a child, but I still feel myself every day defined by my infertility, having to explain to people if they ask, why does your daughter have blonde hair? You have such brown hair. Like, where did she get that from? And me having to make a decision, okay, do I want to say she's adopted? Do I want to just brush it aside and say, it's just a different gene, et cetera, whatever. Those things always travel with you. They never get easier. I think even if you find success, and especially if you don't find success, I think it can be an even harder type of transition. And we try to be honest with that in the book, is that there's never necessarily an end resolution to fertility. It's always kind of living with you. Elizabeth, would you say something more?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's true. And even if you do, fertility treatment can do really great things. You mentioned in vitro fertilization. That's definitely an option for those who have access to that kind of care. But there's still a lot of barriers in the United States, and the majority of states do not cover any or have any mandated coverage for infertility treatments. And it can be, a lot to try to take that on financially. So that's one of the things that can keep people from pursuing that, if it's something that they want to pursue. And even if someone tries it, it doesn't always end in a baby. So just kind of making that realization or trying to spread that word that through the book and through the work we do, that even when you do end up with a baby or a child after infertility, these things stick with you. You face it in different ways. Like Maria mentioned, your kids don't look like you, or are they adopted, and how much of that do you want to disclose, and what's that going to look like for you and your family? So it continues on. I kind of thought when I started making art that the artwork would also be a way that I could kind of remember and mark that time in my life when I was dealing with infertility. But it's been, well over 10 years now since I started creating that artwork. And even though I am parenting now, I have stepchildren who I love, and I'm so excited to be able to be parenting these days. There are still a lot of triggers that I'm faced even on a daily basis, dealing with that kind of trauma that you experienced, and also just navigating life as a parent after infertility.
And this came to mind as well, too, with all the scientific advances in research and everything, where everything is advanced in terms of healthcare and even like pregnancy, ch childbearing, and everything like that. Do you think the advances in technology, do you think that would start decreasing the infertility, or is it still an issue that needs to be tackled, like cost, stress, or anything like that, or even insurance too? It's like everybody ties everything to insurance. And do you think with all the technological advances, do you think the infertility rate would decrease, or would it increase, or would it just like stay the same?
That's a good question. Maria, do you want to take that on? I mean, I have some ideas. I think the infertility rate seems to be continuing to decrease, that there are a lot more options for kind of working around that and building families because technology is advancing. But one of the things that I found difficult was that there are so many ways to access care in terms of, there's in vitro fertilization, there's third party reproduction in terms of donor egg, donor sperm, donor embryo, surrogacy. There are so many ways that you can build your family, but as I said just now, not everyone has access to being able to do that. But also, there are so many things to try that sometimes it can be difficult to stop, right? So that's one of the things that I really struggled with was being okay. Like, is it okay that I stop? Are people going to look at me differently or think I didn't want it hard badly enough if I don't pursue those options? So that was one of the things that I found difficult.
Yeah, and even with myself, I never actually went through. I made a decision not to do any fertility specific treatment simply because, well, one, the cost. Like, we just didn't have money for that. Like, being 23, we had college debt. We didn't have money for our fertility treatments. And I think that is just a really big barrier for a lot of people. Like Elizabeth said, like, it's great if you can have access and you can afford certain things, but I know, for instance, like in North Dakota, where you are, like North Dakota's a state where they're trying to put forward legislation to ensure that people can have access to fertility coverage. It's an ongoing issue. Even the state of Wisconsin, we don't have that. But a state like Illinois, which borders us, has protections and provides better access to fertility treatment. And so there's a huge barrier in terms of the types of patients that you're seeing, in terms of the types of treatments you can get. And it's a state by state issue. And so if people are interested in learning more, you could really go to Resolve, the National Infertility Association. And that's where they have a lot of information about how is infertility being talked about, being addressed on a state by state basis, and also provides a lot of information for doing larger federal advocacy work. I think what's so interesting about this is, like, Elizabeth and I met through there, and we met largely because of this desire to do a lot of federal advocacy to change the federal landscape instead of a state by state basis. But lately, there's been a lot more traction just trying to work on a state by state basis and doing really grassroots types of advocacy. So I would encourage any of your listeners, if they're they're wanting to know more what's happening in your specific state, just to go to that site, and they'll have a lot of specific information.
And what's the website again?
It's Resolve, the National Infertility Association. I think it's resolve.org.
Resolve.org. Okay. You mentioned about the states, about North Dakota, and I'm glad you did. They're all for family and everything else. You talk about Wisconsin, Illinois, and what about Michigan, Aunt Elizabeth State?
Yeah, so there are a lot of barriers here in Michigan. We do not have mandated coverage for infertility, and the Michigan Fertility Alliance is doing a lot of really great work now. Specifically, you know, they started out kind of wanting to bring protection for surrogacy or make surrogacy available, because in the state of Michigan, surrogacy is actually illegal in terms of being able to hire someone to carry a child for you. So you have to rely on, you know, knowing someone who is willing to just do that for you, or as a gift, as, you know, something that they'll do free of charge. Or going to another state. And there are also barriers with individuals who do use surrogacy in Michigan. Many times, depending on the county, actually have to go and legally adopt their biological children, their genetic children. So the Michigan Fertility Alliance started out kind of wanting to fix that, but realized that it's a much bigger issue, that there are a lot of there's a lot of protection in general needed around fertility and reproductive options and growing your family for all different populations. So they're really looking at protecting children and families, and you know, everyone's access to building their family in the way that they need to for themselves. Whether that's because they have a physical diagnosis, or if they're a same-sex couple, or a trans or non-binary individual who needs access to this care to build their family, is just really looking to make sure that those protections are in place so that everyone has the opportunity to grow their families at the time that they want to, in the way that they need to.
Okay. Sorry, Maria.
I was just saying, I mean, if you think about it, so surrogacy, people might say like, oh, who, you know what I mean? Like, that seems like such an elective thing. Like, that's what, you know, Hollywood stars are using. But really, it's like for individuals, women who are going through cancer treatments or had gone through cancer, surrogacy is simply like a really good option to have access to, because you might not actually be able to physically carry a child, right? And so it kind of extends the line of like, other physical diagnoses, medical conditions can really impact why there's a need for surrogacy to be available, not just as this like, I don't want to carry a baby, I don't want to, you know, go through labor type of privileged position.
Okay. You mentioned the states, including Michigan as well too. What are some more most populous states, especially coming up in a crucial year at the end of 2024, like New York, California, Texas, and Florida? What are their laws and regulations?
You know, I think New York is always a leader in terms of having good access. California, I'm not totally sure where they're at. Florida, it's hit or miss. I mean, these are like state by state types of decisions largely that are made. I mean, I would say if you really want to know, contact your legislator and see, you know, how they're voting on some of these issues. These are larger issues that honestly are tied into things around personhood bills and around decisions around like abortion and what your abortion laws are. Simply because if you think about it, if you are diagnosed with infertility or experiencing infertility because you've had multiple different miscarriages and are high risk, it can be a very difficult decision to decide that you're going to want to go through another pregnancy, whether that's through in vitro fertilization or something else, knowing that you have a high risk of possibly not sustaining that pregnancy. And so it can be really difficult if you live in a state like Texas, for instance, right, that has really strict abortion laws. So if you make it through past 6 weeks and then suddenly, right, you're at 20 weeks and the doctor said there's no heartbeat and you can't actually access any sort of, you know, miscarrying DNC services, it can be a real issue. So That's why it's infertility is not so cut and dry, and it really depends upon what your state laws are in terms of how you're making these decisions. That it's not just an abortion issue, it's really about healthcare and how women can access their healthcare, and what states are kind of providing the best rights. I mean, we saw an example of that with someone like Kate Cox, for instance, in Texas. Like, those are real issues impacting real people, and it's people who want to have families. It's not people who don't want to have children.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned some of the families as well, too. How about some of the families in your book as well, too? Infertility's a curation. There's artwork from families and individuals and everything. Maybe highlight, you know, just a few of those, and especially what state they're from, too, since we're on that subject. I'm glad I mentioned about North Dakota, and that just made me, you know, go off on a light bulb as well, too, and what they're doing. So maybe just, you know, go over that book and show it to everybody, and maybe just highlight a few, where they're from, what state and everything. And, you know, talk about the artwork. It's like, I love to see the book.
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Oh, you know, we have people from a variety of states around the U.S., but it's not just individuals in the U.S. either. We have individuals from the U.K., Israel. There are people from, you know, various locations. And I think some of that that information or those barriers and those experiences around access to care definitely come out through the stories, and just, you know, having the access, especially for those stories of individuals in the book who are LGBTQIA plus or IA, who have access or need access to a sperm or an egg, who, you know, sometimes are mistaken in waiting rooms or in exam rooms as, you know, mother and daughter, for example, instead of a couple who's there to achieve a pregnancy together. We have those stories. Maria, I don't know if you have any specific stories from any specific states that you want to share, but definitely really runs a really large range of experiences, some based on location, but really just, you know, infertility is kind of a universal experience, and that people all over the world experience it. And sometimes, you know, the access you have to the care based on where you are, or even, you know, Black women, Hispanic women, for example, experience higher rates of infertility, in some cases from fibroids that are in the uterus that can impact fertility, and, you know, don't always have access to care, maybe not as comfortable going, especially if they've had a history of not having providers listen to them and care for them in the way that they should be cared for. That can be a big barrier to seeking care even. So those stories are definitely shared through the book.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned about the races as well, too, like with the Hispanic community and the, you know, African-American as well. Mm-hmm. What about the mixed races, and especially like, say, Asian-American, Asian-African, or even, say, Hispanic-American? What about the mixed races?
You know, it doesn't discriminate. So it does, you know, everyone experiences it. It doesn't matter race, socioeconomic background. You know, there are so many situations that people can be in and have different access to care. And it can be really difficult, for example, for men and women who need access to a sperm donor or an egg donor or a donor embryo, yeah, because there aren't as many people of color who are donating their eggs or sperm. And that can be really a big barrier if you want to have a child who shares, is the same race as you, to have access to those options. You know, one of the individuals that we interviewed through the Art of Infertility, and who isn't featured in the book, when she was trying to build her family with an egg donor, she had the choice of two egg donors, two out of all of the donors, because she wanted, mm-hmm, she was a Black woman who wanted to have a child who, you know, was, and she even said, like, it could just be brown, it didn't have to be black, but there were so few options. So those, you know, that's definitely a barrier for a lot of individuals who are trying to have a child who is from the same background that they are.
I thought she's trying for a basketball football player, so.
No, I don't think she was concerned about that. She just wanted a baby.
I got that. And of course, Maria, maybe you could highlight, you know, just one or two stories from the book as well, too. Even some artwork, if you guys have the book available to show.
Yeah, you know, I think what's unique also about our book is that it also provides perspectives from men, because often there's just, for infertility is often just portrayed from a female context, which I think makes sense because a lot of times if you're going to go through in vitro fertilization, it's just a more physically invasive process for women versus men. But it can also be, I think data shows that it can be even like an increased sense of silencing, shame and stigma for men who we talk about in the introduction, this idea of like, you know, pulling the goalie and fulfilling, you know, these masculine types of identities, right? Where we're kind of glorifying the idea that you knock somebody up. So we have some pictures like that, for instance. This is one that was taken by Ryan Ferrante, which we can kind of see.
But it's simply just a
photo of his wife when their child was being born, and simply being able to capture, I believe it's called, it's titled Until Her Last Breath, This First Breath. This idea, right, of the emotion of finally being able to have her child and their child come to be. And it's, I think that's really just, being able to resonate with that, I think is really powerful. It also just shows, like, Ryan himself is a great advocate around infertility. He actually lives in Illinois and is a surrogacy lawyer as well. But it shows that, you know, you don't have to be an artist per se. Like, picking up the camera is a really great way of, I think, documenting this experience and using it for education. So that's one example. This is an example from another guy. It's 3D, so it's not going to show as well, but these are essentially a mobile that if it's plugged in, the shoes will actually rotate like it would
That is and a really unique idea. I have to talk to my kids about that if they get married and have children. You'll build something like that. It's like, that is a really cool one too.
Yeah So it's kind of neat because you know, they talk a little bit about how they're an engineer and, you know, wanted to design that. But it's also just a repurposing, like you said, of your own baby clothes, right? I know Elizabeth has, like, this little bin I know that her mom gave her of baby clothes that perhaps she can repurpose. It's made me think about that as well. But again, it's another way to kind of incorporate your own, you know, experiences as a child into, you know, your desire to become a parent as well. So those are really, I think, two just different examples that, again, make the art a little bit more accessible to men who are going through it.
That is at a rather interesting. And more on the book, Infertilities, a Curation with Elizabeth Horn and Maria Novotny. We'll find out more in just 1 minute. You listen to The Mike Wagner Show at themikewagnershow.com, powered by SonicWeb Studios, and brought to you by official sponsor, The Mike Wagner Show, international warring author Mia Molson Zia Missing. We'll be back with the authors of Infertilities, A Curation, Elizabeth Horn and Maria Novotny, after this time. We're back with Elizabeth Horn and Maria Novotny of Infertilities, A Curation, here on The Mike Wagner Show. And, you know, just a couple of things. What do you want readers to get from the book?
I mean, there's a lot of different things. I think for me, the way that the book is structured, there are three different sections. So there's a 1, 2, 3. We don't have titles for it. There aren't really chapters. They're just sections, and we intentionally did that To kind of pair different parts of the journey together. When you're first going through infertility, I think it's really hard to even foresee that there's going to be multiple different iterations of how infertility continues to live on in your life. This book, I think, does a real testament for people who are, you know, really struggling to see what would my ending look like, because it can be really dark at the beginning stages. But it also offers for those who have kind of gone through the journey and made their own peace, their own resolution with their infertility, whether that's, you know, having a child, not having a child, whether that's them deciding that maybe they, you know, are going to do using a donor embryo, something that maybe they didn't necessarily think that they were going to use before. It provides different versions of what resolution, what success is, because we really want people to understand that success isn't necessarily having this take-home baby, and that's okay, that that's a success too if you come to a certain joint decision where you both feel happy with what it means, right, to live as an infertile person or an infertile couple. And we want more stories like that, because we just don't think it's a justice to just, you know, continue perpetuating ideas, right, that you have to have a baby in order to kind of cure yourself of infertility. That's simply just not the reality for a lot of people, and we try to give a lot of voice to that.
Okay.
Elizabeth? Yeah, and I would say too that, you know, that's one of the things that was so important to me about art, is that, you know, I couldn't create a baby, but I could create this artwork that had the ability to tell my story and share my story with others and advocate for better coverage and better access to care for individuals and couples and families dealing with infertility. And, you know, we share the stories too of single parents by choice in this book. And that's, you know, another area we don't think of is single parents by choice who are faced with infertility. Robin Silberglide, who is our other co-editor in the book, it comes from their perspective in her stories, and there are other stories of as well of individuals who are single parents by choice who maybe first had a diagnosis of infertility socially, just as like a single man or a single woman who was dealing with infertility, but later need access to care also because they find out they have physical barriers, or maybe not. Maybe it's just that they need access to sperm or egg or womb, but really sharing those stories of you know, diverse experiences and seeing the overlap, but also the nuances. I think that's something that the artwork can do that is, and the stories, but just really is able to interpret in a way that other mediums sometimes can't. And Maria touched on it earlier, but just that this book is for everyone. It's not just for people who are dealing with infertility, but friends and family, healthcare providers, legislators, anyone who is interested in learning about someone who's maybe having a different experience than they are, and really finding a way to learn about that and know how to handle it when they're faced with it, so that they can help those who are dealing with it and help their friends and family through that experience.
Okay, and where can we find the book at?
The book is available pretty much everywhere at this point, which is great. We definitely recommend that people check out their local bookstore if they have a favorite bookstore in their area that they want to try out. It's, of course, available on Amazon. It's available on bookshop.org. Am I saying that right? But just it's available through our publisher, Wayne State University Press, as well. So pretty much if you search up infertility as a curation, hopefully you'll find a way to find it, and or your local library.
All right, well, certainly check those out. Once again, we're with authors of the book, Infertilities, a Curation, Elizabeth Horn and Maria Novotny, here on the Mike Wagner Show. Just a couple more things. What else can we expect from you guys in 2024 and beyond?
Well, we have some exciting things this year. We're still working on putting our full year together. We definitely encourage those who are interested in talking about art and infertility to reach out to us. We're easy to find on artofinfertility.org. We always love an opportunity to go into a community and curate exhibits of patient-made artwork. So I know Maria and Robin are going to be at the Association of Writers and Writing Programs conference coming up, but that's very soon. I don't know if it might be over by the time this airs. In Kansas City, Missouri, we'll be having a couple of exhibits this year of artwork. Couple of things going on in Michigan at Michigan State University. But we're always excited to continue collecting artwork too. If people have art that they've created that they'd like to share through our organization, and always happy for opportunities to share the stories through art and writing. Maria, do you want to add to that at all?
Okay.
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, we're going to be at doing a lot of work with universities this next year. I think a lot of people are like, universities, infertility, English, how does this all relate sometimes? But that's where we do a lot of our education. So much of, you know, college age students are taught, you know, control your fertility, you know, you can figure out the best time. And we're really trying to bring this education to them sooner than later. And so that's where I think a lot of our energy is going to be going. So we'll be doing some presentations and then an exhibit there in November, right around the election, which will be really important as well, given Michigan and everything happening there.
Okay. We're certainly looking forward to that issue. We'll keep our eyes out as well too, come that time. And who to consider biggest influences in your careers?
Oh. That's a big question to end with. Whoa.
Yeah. Man. Wow.
I don't know. I will say this much related to this topic. Frida Kahlo is it's a easy go-to, but really, Elizabeth and I were able to see this wonderful exhibit, with her work and Diego Rivera's work as well, in Detroit, which is where she actually had a miscarriage, which is where she creates all this work around reproduction and reproductive loss. It's a very powerful exhibit to be able to go to. And when I'm thinking about infertility and I'm thinking about art and creativity, I think about Frida.
Okay.
Elizabeth? I definitely agree with that. I think that a lot of the inspiration I've had in my career has been from patients. Patients, whether they're infertility patients or other patients, I've done a lot of work with patient advisory councils over the years through my work as a healthcare communicator. And I think that, you know, any opportunity I have to share a patient's story as a way to, you know, increase education around a disease or educate healthcare providers about ways that they can impact their patients' lives in a positive way through, you know, really listening to the patient's experiences and those lived experiences of what they're dealing with. I really feel like that's where a lot of my inspiration comes from.
Okay, that's always amazing. What's the best advice you guys can give to anybody at this point?
I would say if you're dealing with infertility, that know that it might be a long road and it's hard because you're living in limbo and you want to know what your ending is and want to know what your story is. But it's really important to connect with others who have been through it or are going through it now and really build your network, because by building your network, you can learn a lot about, you know, options that are available to you as far as treatment and other ways that you can build your family. So I would say that would be my advice.
Okay, Maria?
Yeah, and I would say for those going through infertility, it can be really hard to feel like you can talk about it, that you can open up about it. But I think as soon as you make that brave choice to do that, you suddenly are told about this cousin or this other sister or this other friend who went through something similar. And like Elizabeth mentioned, it's just a network that we often don't realize is there. But once you tap into it, you realize, one, you're not alone, that you shouldn't feel so ashamed. And there's a weight that comes off of you going through it. And I think if you can lift that weight, that's one step closer to healing and to just finding peace.
Mm-hmm. And that is really good as well, too. Once again, we're here with Elizabeth Horn, Maria Novotny of Infertility's A Curation here on the Mike Wagner Show. Guys, a very big thank you for your time. You both are fantastic. Looking forward to having you soon. Keep us up to date. Keep in touch. Live have you back. Once again, what's your website? How do people contact you? Where can people purchase or check out your book?
Our website is artofinfertility.org. You can contact us there at info@artofinfertility.org or using our first names with @artofinfertility.org. And the book is available on Amazon, bookshop.org, your favorite, available from your favorite local bookstore. Yeah, I hope you'll check it out. Thanks so much for having us.
We'll certainly do. And guys, a very big thank you for your time. You've been totally amazing. Learned a lot. Looking forward to having you soon. Keep us up to date. Keep in touch. Laugh, have it back. We wish you all the best. And guys, you definitely have a great future ahead of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.